My name is Simon Garr, I'm a school counselor at the University of Manchester. Actually, my title there is Professor of Architecture, and I lead an architectural research group. But actually, I'm not really an architect at all, I'm a social scientist. And I've been working on issues of architecture, design, planning, infrastructure in cities for, I guess, all of my career. I've always been based in schools of architecture and planning. So all of my work has been absolutely about a collaboration with real, genuine architects, with artists, with planners, with economists, with engineers, and so on and so on, trying to understand the kind of multiple shaping of built environments. And so my collaboration with Wolfgang, which has been going on a number of years now, really started as a conversation around Wolfgang's work and my particular interpretation of Wolfgang's work, which at the time I think came a little bit as a surprise to Wolfgang, that I read his work in a slightly different way. And after those conversations, I decided I'd put a link in between our two presentations, which was the transfer project, because Wolfgang kindly invited me to come along to the opening show and chair a panel, and I actually wrote a piece for the catalogue for transfer, which actually tried to offer a very different interpretation of what I thought transfer was about. And it seemed to me that the powerful thing from in architectural terms about Wolfgang's work is it moves us away from seeing buildings, architecture, as kind of standalone objects, as completed things. So often if you pick up a book about architecture or an architecture journal, you'll see beautiful pictures taken on brightly lit sunny days of a completed building. You can almost imagine the red ribbon has just been cut and pulled away, and then the discussion will be about that building. And in fact, we all know that buildings and the building project is a messy process, starting from the beginning of inception, through the construction, through the opening, and then, very importantly, the mist phase, often the habitation of those buildings. So buildings continually have lives. And I think we've seen Wolfgang's work invites us to see architecture as an ongoing process. So it opens up the architectural process and, importantly, puts architecture in a very particular context. So you've heard from even Wolfgang's brief presentation of his work on transfer, context is all important to him. Understanding what the space is, and then involving multiple actors. And again, not just the kind of experts, but even the kind of, you know, the young trainees, the construction trainees, so involving everyone, which is the reality, of course, of any architectural project. Now, this focus on kind of interpretation and process and contingency and context also comes out in my work that I've been doing for a number of years now, often in collaboration. In fact, Graham Farmer from Newcastle University is here today, and in fact, this is his slide, so thank you, Graham. We've worked together for many years trying to understand the whole debate about sustainability. And again, if you look in the journals and many of the articles about sustainability, what you'll see is an interpretation based on a whole set of facts around what the environmental challenge involves, and then sets of recommendations or best practices of how to respond to that factual challenge. In fact, when you start to research sustainable architecture, either by looking at built examples, looking at the theories and kind of debates in the literature, what you find is incredible diversity, huge interpretive flexibility about what the environmental challenge represents and how we should respond to it. Whether place and space is important, or whether we can just design, you know, zero carbon buildings in kind of building research stations and simply transfer them out around the world, or where the local context is all important, and so on. And there's a whole lecture around that and many articles we could pass to you if you're interested in that. So I could see in Wolfgang's emphasis on process and contingency, many overlaps with the debate about the environment. And so Wolfgang and I for a while now have been talking about the relationship between his work on architecture and a kind of an approach to kind of eco-housing or eco-buildings, and whether there would be a fruitful exchange there. And we got our opportunity to start to test these ideas out in a kind of brief, small, modest project in Singapore. Singapore was having an architecture festival which was going to focus on the issue of climate change with lots of different kind of international teams involved. Now, I don't know how many people have been to Singapore, but it's a kind of well-known exemplar of kind of future cities. In fact, I was reading in The Guardian on the train yesterday coming back, it's now topping the lead as the most expensive city to live in the world. Now, when you think the transformation from what Singapore was in really just a few short decades, it's really a remarkable story of urban transformation. And here we can see the kind of environmental degradation that kind of early Singapore, after it started to become an economic trading post, to what it's become now, is really a huge, huge transformation, and many would argue for the better. But obviously, it comes with costs. And if we go back to, you know, kind of pre-Singapore as a modern city times, we would find, obviously, a very, very different environment, and something much more recognizable in the Southeast Asian context, with a particular kind of vernacular architecture, which many architects, environmental architects, I think, would kind of point to as a kind of at least early inspiration about a much closer relationship to nature, a much more relational kind of positioning to place. So, of course, this has all gone in Singapore. And, in fact, if you go and look for these stilt houses now, you'll only find one or two, and they will be in heritage parks. So this approach, this vernacular approach to architecture, is now being consigned very much to the margins as a kind of tourist spectacle, if you want. And so in Singapore, Wolfgang and I felt you had the opportunity in one way to look at two paths, two very divergent paths of designing a city. One, the kind of super modernity, and the other, the much more vernacular, close to nature kind of approach. And obviously, playing devil's advocate here, trying to stretch out the two kind of approaches. A further important component of this work, another colleague, Oliver Heidrich at Newcastle University, had developed this new material, aquadyne, which is essentially a whole set of mixed waste plastics compressed together to produce a building block material, often used in drainage in golf golf courses, and I think on green roofs, etc. So Wolfgang, again, saw an opportunity here to use this as a basic kind of material, and we put in a proposal to Singapore to use the stilt house typology, but using this kind of recycled material to invite reflection, I guess, to act as a catalyst in the debate about urban futures. We were successful, and we were lucky enough. We didn't have much choice about where this was sited, but it worked out well for us because we were given a site in a very small kind of leafy little oasis at the top of Orchard Road. Anyone who's been to Singapore will almost certainly have visited Orchard Road. It's the premier shopping street in Singapore, and quite an experience if you've ever been there. So it is a temple of consumerism, I think you might describe it as. So we put our little stilt house here in this little green park. Very important element of Wolfgang's stilt house was permeability and openness. So partly there we were trying to reflect a very different relationship to nature than you find in all the rest of the buildings in Singapore, which are almost without exception kind of fully air-conditioned and having a very defensive relationship to the nature of experienced in Singapore, the climate experienced in Singapore. So we wanted to have this permeability, partly to represent this very different relationship to nature, but also to encourage people to come inside as a way of kind of having conversations about what Singapore has become, what's been left behind, what's the future. And we recorded many of these in kind of Vox Pox interviews, and they've been included in a paper that we published just at the back end of last year. We can give you details about that if you're interested. So encouraged by this kind of partnership, we've been working on a larger bid to the AHRC, and partly to our amazement, because we felt this was a fairly innovative kind of collaboration, and AHRC could see the potential in it, we hope, and they decided to fund it. So that's why we're here today, and we're actually delighted to have the opportunity to work not only together with a whole series of partners now within a live project around Dunstan Staithes. And while the context is very different to Singapore, we have similar kinds of issues here. We have an historical structure which takes us back to a very kind of earlier age. We have a very real present. This is here in a very kind of real way, both kind of in terms of its materiality, but also in terms of things like costs and safety and aesthetics and all of these kinds of issues. And so we have an opportunity now in this project, starting really today in terms of enlarging the conversation, to really start thinking about the meaning of this, to look at the different kinds of interpretations, and to try and open a space about the future of the Staithes. So I just want to throw a few things out in terms of the early work we've done and the parameters of thinking around the Staithes. First of all, I think it's important to note here that while this is very particular, the Dunstan Staithes, to Northeast history, it's not just a kind of Northeast phenomena. This can be seen as a global typology. So here we have a Staithes in Vancouver. I hope I've got the places right. Here's one in Honolulu. Here's one in Pittsburgh, and here's a contemporary one in Gdańsk in Poland. So this is a global typology. So we need absolutely to be focusing on its place in Northeast history and its current location and in terms of the local communities there. But we also need to remember, actually, this is a typology which is very kind of mobile and is wrapped up with kind of the global forces, with globalization, with the intersection of trade, of railways, of ports and shipping. Very importantly, as mentioned, that we're essentially social scientists, so inevitably we're interested in the social organization of the stays and debates around the stays. So what we've been starting to do, myself and researcher Angela, have been starting to map the social organization of interests here. And I have to say, this is a very simplified version of what we've already found. So two things, I think, to take to this. First of all, the diversity of interests here. Both human and non-human, that's important here, that actually, you know, materiality and birds and non-human actors are quite key to trying to understand that. They also have a kind of voice and a kind of stake in this debate, and it's important that we acknowledge and recognize that. And you start to see there in green some of the kind of key emblematic issues or concerns representative of these different kinds of groups which are shaping this debate. Now, we had the opportunity, I think a number of you were probably there, to have a kind of soft launch of the project with a kind of close project partners. And during that, we took the opportunity as good researchers, and we had people trapped in a room with a glass of wine for a couple of hours, to just start very gently, this is not deep science, but starting to try and sketch out the particular environmental concerns just on bits of yellow post-its. That people thought about or recognized when they thought about the stays. And so we just did this kind of word cloud. So even from this very kind of light touch research moment, if you want, you can see the diversity of environmental issues that are aroused, that are stimulated by local actors when we think about the stays. Now, don't expect you to be able to read this, but what this diagram is starting to illustrate, what we're trying to do here, is map the history of the stays, but contextualize it in relation to kind of key environmental debates, and also key environmental thinking that's going on in the literature, in the debates out there, in a multidisciplinary kind of way. So this is some of the kind of analytical work that Angela and I in particular are trying to do and contribute to the project to help to situate both the historical, the contemporary, and future debates around the stays, and also kind of influence the kind of artwork that Wolfgang is going to produce. So as Wolfgang said, this is not often when you have projects like this, you have an event towards the end, and we proudly stand up and say, and this is what we did, and this is what we achieved, and this is why it's important. We felt it was important in the spirit of the project actually not to do this at the end and tell you what we've done, and Wolfgang taught you through his artwork. Rather, we positioned this towards the beginning of the project, to enlarge the number of voices involved in this project so we can learn from you and better situate both the actual artwork that Wolfgang's going to produce, but also the kind of social science thinking that we're developing and the particular issues and theories that we want to follow. So we have not invited you, despite the fact that we're spending most of the morning talking at you. There is going to be lots of time this afternoon for you to contribute, and your contributions will make a real difference to the development of this project and the shaping of this project. We invite you, I'm not a tweeter myself, there may be tweeters among you, we invite you to tweet about your thoughts as well, which we another way of us capturing your kinds of particular kinds of inputs. There will be a website going live soon, and we will be in touch with you all about that, which we're endeavouring to make as interactive as possible, so both for you to be able to keep in touch with what we're doing, but also again to contribute, give us ideas if you're able to. Again, on your name tag, you'll find a number which corresponds to the breakout session you've been invited to join this afternoon. This is also in your paperwork as well, so don't worry about noting that down now. But you can see the numbers, the particular kinds of questions, and the group leaders. And following, as I said, following the workshops, there will be a panel led by our chair, Michael Tower. So again, an opportunity to bring those groups together to hear what the discussions have been about in the other groups and try to look at kind of connections. We'll tell you which rooms to go after lunch. We'll lead you in the right direction. But can I ask if there's any questions about the logistics of the day? That's all clear. That's great. It falls to me to do the health and safety, so there are no planned fire alarms. So if there's a real one, please follow the fire exit signs. Wolfgang talked, invited you to come and see the spades. Many of you have seen it, some of you may have not. Wolfgang's correct, there is a planned walk tomorrow being led by Angela. There are some limited places left on that. If you're available tomorrow morning, would like to visit the spades inspired by today, then please see Angela and Marianne and reserve a place, and they will tell you all about it.